Welcome back to the program, Outdoor Journal on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Angelo Viola. He is Mike Mooring behind the glass today doing his thing. How's your thing going?
I thought you'd be the better judge of that.
I think your thing is lovely today.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're quite welcome. Let's not forget poor Derek Bradeo. He's feeling left out there. He's part of the threesome running the program today. Well, I'm not running it. I'm kind of here, you know, doing my thing.
Your thing is going very well.
Is it going
well?
Pretty good?
Do you say so myself?
That little musical, background music that was playing during that jingle there, it brings back memories. That is the original Fishing Canada theme song, produced in 1986 by a gentleman. Probably doesn't mean anything to a lot of people until I tell you who he really is. His name is Brian Gatto, and he's a local boy, local to the Oshawa area. And he went on to his claim to fame prior and during the production of that little Fishing Canada theme song and beyond. He was Ann Murray's music arranging pianist, who
really
appeared in all of the Ann Murray TV shows and TV specials and et cetera. He was always that guy on the keyboards playing behind her. And he wrote the Fishing Canada theme song.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, a lot of history. Do you know, I had information from the organization that gathers musical rights for musicians and producers and that kind of thing. SOCAM, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And so a few years ago, I received an interesting little bit of information from them. And that was that the Fishing Canada theme song became the longest playing Canadian produced Canadian television theme song.
Really?
Yes, of continuous play. And this was right after Hockey Night in Canada had gone off the air with their song, you know, that whole TSN bought it from CBC and all that. It was immediately after that news came out. Nobody knows about it, but I thought it would be kind of cool.
That's,
I shared it with
that's
you.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
That's
so
cool.
It's the longest, and how appropriate that we're talking about the longest playing this and the longest running this and all that stuff. And we have somebody who has been quietly cobbling out, crafting his position within the fishing community during that whole 40 years. And he's on the line with us now. An old friend of mine, his name is Phil Morlock. He hasn't been on the show for a while. He is the Vice President of Government Affairs and Advocacy for Shimano North America Holdings, Inc., and also with the Canadian Sport Fishing Industry Association. And about to retire. I'm still in shock when I heard that. Good morning, Mr. Morlock. How are you?
Mr. Viola, good morning, sir.
What is this nonsense about you retiring?
Well, it's retiring, sort of.
Ah, okay. I knew there had to be a hook, all right?
Yeah, no, there's... I'm retiring from Shimano and my work there, but I'm going to remain engaged on behalf of the fishing industry with government affairs in Canada on behalf of CSIA and our great team that we have together there. So,
wow.
All the government affairs issues that are confronting people that fish and hunt, you know, it's taken all those 40 years to build the relationships that help advance the interests of people in the outdoors. And so I'm going to stay engaged in that.
Good for you, man. Good for you. When I just heard about it, and I said, we got to get him on the air. We got to talk. When I heard about it, I said, well, first thing I noticed when it came across my desk, I said, okay, all right, something's not right here. He's been with Shimano 39 years. Surely to God, you could stick it out one more year.
I mean, it's 30 years, 29.
Okay, 29.
Be 30 in October.
Right, right. Okay. So that's why I said, first thing I said, why didn't he make it an even number? let's go back in time, shall we? People don't, I dare say most of the anglers in this country don't know the amount of work and effort that goes into keeping this fishery that we take for granted on the rails day in and day out. And, nobody has been more instrumental, in my opinion, on helping with those issues than yourself. And people just don't realize it. Don't realize how close we have come so many times to losing this privilege called fishing in this country, certainly in not just this country, in North America, that you've been heavily involved in negotiating on our behalf and not getting the credit for it. So this is your time, my friend. Tell us what you've been
doing. It's very nice of you to say that, Ange, but there's a lot of us involved in this, and certainly I have a great team that I work with in both countries, actually. And it started with you and your brother Reno. When I first got to know you guys, and you and Brian Bremner and Randy Jennings came up here to shoot a show at my place near Algonquin Park, and it went forward from there. You think about, I don't think I ever laughed harder in my life than on some of the trips with you and Reno and Bowman.
We did that. Hey, when I came in this morning, Phil, when I came into the studio this morning, we've got a big collage of news clippings and press releases and magazine covers, sort of under glass. And it's sort of, it's our archive, our historical path through the industry. And I came in this morning, and the first thing I noticed is a picture of yourself and Reno and myself, and Derwood Hines, our old friend Derwood Hines, we were in North Carolina, I believe, just about ready to go out on a fishing charter. And it was in the local paper down there, and it just brought back so many memories. We have been just so blessed and so fortunate to have traveled the paths that we've traveled, haven't we?
Well, and when you think of it, many of the people that I came to know in the industry and around the industry became longtime personal friends. There's a long list, but certainly from the beginnings at Fish in Canada and some of the things we did there with the newspaper and some of the stories we broke in that. And I remember Tom Brook at Shimano Canada increased the advertising because he said we need more of that kind of journalism. He said we need to be exposing some of the threats that are coming at us, and that's how I got to know Tom. And it went forward from there, and got to know the Shimano family members. Kozo Shimano actually is the fellow that made it possible for me to work both in the U.S. and Canada, and so the Shimano aspect started credit to Tom, but beyond that, over time, all the different key people, I can count as personal friends, people like Ray Scott, Forrest Wood, Rick Morgan, Mike Reeder, Rick Amsbury, our great friend.
Oh, yeah.
And it's been pretty unique, and it's some of the things that we've been able to do over time with, the team we have together. We've got a great group together, actually, in the Government Affairs Committee with the Sport Fishing Industry Association, with Kim Rhodes and Mike Melnick. Tom's part of that. Angela, who works with me. Tom's wife, Lynn, who does our research and the background stuff on some of the policy issues and that. But, some of the unique experiences that we've had putting together the Parliamentary Outdoor Caucus, the all-party caucus, actually convincing members of Parliament in Ottawa that they actually can work together across the aisle on behalf of the issues that affect fishing, hunting, trapping, recreational shooting, conservation, all those things. And we had to take them to Washington, D.C. and meet with members of Congress who have had that type of a caucus in place for over 30 years. They couldn't quite get their head around how they work together in these kind of issues in such a partisan atmosphere. And once they heard it directly from members of Congress, they said, actually, issues of national defense, national emergencies, and fishing and hunting are about the only places where we really do work across the aisle all the time. And so once members of Parliament heard that, they came back here and put the caucus together, and it's still going. We've got co-chairs from the Liberal side, from the Conservative side, Goody Hutchings, Bob Zimmer, people like Gary Breitkreitz, who's a household name for a lot of people in this country, especially from the gun issues.
Yeah.
And, Peter Stouffer, Larry Bagnell from the Yukon, Larry Miller from over by Owen Sound, all those people, played a role. And so, it's often myself that gets noticed because I'm kind of the point person for some of these things, but there's an awful lot of people that are part of this and certainly deserve, equal credit.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't mean to just say it was a one-man show. I know there's a bunch of you doing it, but I was more leaning towards, you know, some of the issues that we don't even realize are going on every single day that you guys are making sure doesn't, you know, deteriorate our enjoyment of the outdoors and in particular fishing and hunting that we don't even know are going on. You know, and it's a battle. It's a constant battle. I mean, this new gun legislation is going to be, in my opinion, one of the monumental hurdles in our history books. 100 years from now, we'll be looking back at this moment, and talking. Our children's children's children will be talking about it, and you guys are going to be right there and keeping that fight going. So. Most people don't even know what's going on. We just know we get up, get in the boat, go out, have fun, fish, and come home and tell stories. And without a group like yourself, it just wouldn't happen. So,
well, you know, and you know, there's a special thanks, I think, to you too for always being willing to cover the major policy issues, you know, that affect all of us, people that hunt and fish and conservation. You've always been willing to put that forward. And that's certainly, you know, giving a voice to some of the issues and some of the things that we work on all the time. You know, you're right about the firearms legislation. You know, as you know, I was in a former life, I was a police chief. And I look at some of the things that Bill Blair has put forward. You know, I think he's a disgrace to law enforcement and, you know, the ethics that we're supposed to uphold. But there's a lot of threats coming at angling, especially. People don't, they see a lot of the notoriety that the gun issues get, shooting and so on. But, you know, there's a quiet movement in North America, but it's especially focused in Canada, to close vast areas of water to all use. And it's under the guise of protectionism, but there's really no scientific basis for it. And so, you know, it's a creep, if you will. Tom likes to call it the death of a thousand cuts, you know, but it's something that is pretty significant. It started on the West Coast in British Columbia. It's moving across to the east. It's spreading into the Great Lakes. And so, you know, you're right about those things being under the radar, Ange, and it's a constant challenge to stay current with it, to keep an eye on it, to keep briefing members of government at all levels. But a lot of these initiatives are coming out of funding in the U.S., hundreds of millions of dollars, and trying to close off access to Canada's natural resources. And, you know, we hear about it with energy issues and so on, but it's not just energy issues. It spills over into the access for people that fish and hunt.
What does the U.S. have to do with this, though, Phil? I mean, you that's twice you've said that, and I know you and I have talked before. I'm playing devil's advocate, obviously. But when you say coming out of the U.S., people have got to be sitting there saying, what is he talking about? What's the U.S. got to do with whether I go up to the Kawarthas and fish or not?
Well, there's, you know, the money for it is coming out of the U.S. A lot of the organizations that lobby for these closures are international. They're in both the U.S. and Canada. But there's literally hundreds of millions of dollars have come out of some of the capitalist foundations in the United States that are funding the organizations that lobby heavily in Ottawa for these closures. And, you know, it started...
To what end? To what end? Like, why?
Well, it's really hard to say what the motives are sometimes, but if you think of where the funding comes from, it's all people that made money either in the energy industry, in the computer industry, in capitalist ventures. And I don't know if they're trying to turn Canada into a great park or what the real motive is. It's often hard to say because it is under the radar and runs, you know, very quietly, but also very effectively. And if you look at some of the organizations in Canada that are putting this forward, a lot of this goes back to the spring bear hunt issue in Ontario when that started. And it was funded and put forward by the International Fund for Animal Welfare and the World Wildlife Fund. It was well publicized at the time. But a lot of these organizations are continuing to push for these closures. And as a wildlife biologist myself, I always look at, okay, what does the science say? What's the data say? And it's absent. And, I mean, we see it in British Columbia with the closures of Chinook salmon fishing. Right. And ostensibly to protect killer whales, but the killer whale population is fine. And PhD scientists at universities out there have done presentations on the population curve. It's all okay. We don't have a problem in many cases, so it's a manufactured crisis. I don't know why organizations in the U.S., or foundations rather, are putting hundreds of millions of their dollars into these initiatives in Canada, but we've seen it in the U.S. as well, but certainly not to the extent that it's happening here. Often Canada is the test market for what happens back in the U.S. on policy issues and natural resources. We've seen it with anti-hunting initiatives. We saw it with the animal rights legislation that you covered, that we were all involved in Ottawa, but it was a trans-border deal was introduced in a number of state legislatures as well, would have made it a criminal offense to kill an animal by any means.
Yeah.
You know, you remember all those fights.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's common fingerprints on a lot of these issues, whether it's the gun issues, whether it's animal rights, whether it's closures under the guise of protectionism when no real threat exists. There's common fingerprints on these, and you know, the money to support these is largely coming out of the U.S. A lot of these groups are based in California.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's quite a challenge to stay in front of all of it. An awful lot of moving parts sometimes.
And obviously, as the chair, government affairs chair for the CSIA and the CNSF, you'll still be able to fight the fight for us without the Shimano position that you had before. Nothing's going to change. So we don't have to worry that we don't have anybody at the helm here is what I'm saying. It sounds like you've got things well in hand for your retirement.
Well, yeah, like I said, it's retirement, sort of, you know. But, you know, I get a lot of support, you know, from my family, from my son and daughter, Doug and Laura, Laura's husband, Mike. I got two little granddaughters, great-granddaughters, Lily and Gwen, you know, and Angela, who works with me, is a great support. She's been with us, 16 years now, and she's going to continue as well. So,
good.
You know, we've got a lot of good support, a lot of good people involved in all of this, Ange, and thank you to you as well.
Well, you're quite welcome, my friend. I was just going to say, enjoy the few seconds of retirement and get back up there and kick some butt for us, will you? But I've got to run, my friend. I just wanted to get you on and wish you all the best in your retirement. Don't be a stranger.
Thank you, Angela. Good to talk to you, Ange.
All right, you take care. Phil Morlock, Vice President of Government Affairs and Advocacy for Shimano North America Holdings and the Canadian Sport Fishing Industry Association. Of course, he just announced his retirement. More journal after this, so I should dare go away.